Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And welcome to the final episode of Talk of the Kingdom, a very special Nintendo Voice Chat mini-series focusing on all things The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. I'm your host, Brian Altano, along with my incredible crew of Zelda superfans, Per Schneider and Rebecca Valentine. We did it. We are here. This is it. This is the final episode of Talk of the Kingdom.
We postponed this so many times.
So many times. So many things came up. Let's see. We had Summer of Gaming popped up. We had a Nintendo Direct pop up.
FTC v. Microsoft. FTC.
There was a bunch of people. Nobody wanted to finish this game.
Not wanting to finish it, I think.
Jada Griffin was supposed to be on the episode this week. She's literally in the demo room here at IGN right now, finishing the game, doing her homework on the bus, trying to get here in time. She was like, can I pop on and talk about it? And we're like, no, you have to have finished
it. She hasn't finished it.
I want to ruin it.
That's a good warning for the audience here. This is it. This is the end of the quest for us here at Talk of the Kingdom. This is the spoiler cast, okay? I need to be abundantly clear here. That means if you have not finished Tears of the Kingdom and you do not want to get spoiled, please back out now. We're going to be talking about the ending, the story, our favorite moments, all that stuff. Save this episode until you're ready. We will be here for you when you need us. Or just if you don't care, you know, just listen, have fun. It's going to be just wonderfully positive. We have good things to say. Okay, Are they gone?
Yep.
Is everyone gone?
If a single person in the comments says you spoiled I don't want to hear it.
This is weird. Get out. If this is one of those things where like you have us on mute, this is me waving my hands. Like, no, don't cover your eyes, cover your ears. Down. Okay. I think they're gone. We can finally do this. Before we do it, real quick, I want to talk about another show here at IGN. Quick plug. We recently started a new show by our loving sister movie, our movie loving sister site, not sister.
Our loving sister movie website.
Yes. Going great today, folks. Called Cinefix. They are launching a new show where hosts Clint Gage, Michael Calabro, and Alex Steadman tackle the best films ever made. They each crafted a list of their 100 favorite movies. Then their producer, Dan, mixed them up with his own mystery algorithm to make the Cinefix top 100. It's a puzzling process, but the result, 100 must-watch movies, each explored in depth every week, from the magic behind Terminator 2 to things you didn't know about Sunset Boulevard. They've got it covered. Cinefix Top 100 kicks off July 3rd. That was last week. Catch us every Monday. On
How's
IGN.
Your sister movie?
Catch our sister movies every Monday on IGN, sisters.com. On IGN, Cinefix's YouTube and popular podcast platforms. Join us as we deep dive into cinema's finest. Okay, enough. Enough of that. Thank you all for the Cinefix. You guys are doing great over there. Have a good time. I want to talk about Zelda.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been waiting so long for this. Talk of the Kingdom was supposed to be a 6-episode miniseries. I think it's like this is what 11
Oops.
Now with a couple of commercial breaks in the middle. None of us wanted this game to end.
Mm. No.
Seth Macy, who hosts NVC, published an op-ed recently on IGN, which he wrote instead of finishing Zelda, about how he didn't want Zelda to end.
We asked him to finish the game and come on the spoiler cast, and he said, no, I don't want to.
He said, I don't want to. I gotta do this. Like, you know, this is a cool place to work. It's a fun job. I think if at any other job, you're like, no, I don't want to finish my work. You might get in trouble, but here, you know what? We're going to make it work. You will see Seth next week back on NVC, but for now, and again, this is it, spoiler zone. I want to talk about the last hour or so of Tears of the Kingdom because I think it's my favorite thing Nintendo has ever done. I think it's one of the most magical finales to any video game ever. I think it's breathtaking. Reb, let's start with you. What was your experience like finishing this game?
I mean, we'll talk about some other things later that happened before that. But I got to a point where I was like ready. Like I finished everything that I wanted to finish because after that, we talked about this in the office earlier. After that ending, I don't want to go back because I feel full. I feel mm-hmm. like I have just had the most full and complete meal. I do not need to eat anymore. Like I have done it. And so, yeah, like, I mean, my partner and I have been playing this game together and we started it together. And for a while he was ahead of me and for a while I was ahead of him. And we managed to time it so that we were finishing together.
Oh my
so
God.
It was like a weekend afternoon. We both stood on the edge of that pit and we took a photo of our TVs side by side.
Side by side TVs.
Yep. In the same place. And then we went, we dove over. I had headphones on. So we were playing separately. I think he ended up finishing like about 10 minutes ahead of me.
I love that you played this like a co-op game.
We really did.
Really cool.
And we took like different paths through the whole game, mm-hmm. but we just ended up converging again at the end. And it was beautiful.
When you jumped into that pit, were you worried that it was, I'll put it this way. When I jumped in there, I thought it was going to be just like a quick tunnel and all of a sudden you'd be like at Ganon's front door, you'd be in the fight, but it was fairly involved. There was a lot to do down there.
Yeah. So I had kind of a hint about this from Jada because she had talked about jumping into this pit like very early on
in the
game.
I did too. And triggering all the pissed off
waves
enemies.
Of monsters. And so I kind of knew there was going to be some fighting. So I came prepared. I was jumping into a pit. So I brought like gloom resistant and gloom healing food. I didn't know how long I was going to be down there.
Right.
I made sure I was full. I actually had a problem because I had done the floating coliseum not that long ago, so I was completely out of shields.
Ooh.
And I had to run around the world for a while and like collect shields again because I knew I was going to be in trouble. But yeah, I was like fully stocked, ready to go, all the shrines done, all the hearts, jumped down there and just like wave at, there's like a Lionel down there.
Yeah.
Which I had just gotten very good at fighting in the floating coliseum. But I think like, you know, I was killing things was cool, but the sort of, right. Don't clip that out. The sort of
box quote,
the sort of like first emotional hit of being down there was that moment where it pops up with a little, because I had all five sages out. They suddenly disappeared, and it says something like, "The
sages can't be reached.
The sages can't reach you here," or whatever that line is.
Yes.
And I was just like, ooh.
Which was fascinating about a game that was largely about connecting, right? It was about tethering yourself to community, to others, and bringing the world back together, to all of a sudden being like, your phone doesn't have a signal down here. Like, you don't have any friends.
I first misinterpreted it as, okay, they gave you all this help with the sages, you know, shooting arrows and like you being able to deploy them as weapons over the course of the game,
right?
And they're like, okay, now we're gonna do the thing like in Mario Sunshine where they take your water backpack away. Like relearn how it is to fight alone.
I thought that's what it was gonna be like too,
but then they do that for a little bit and then they use it as an emotional reconnect with them, where each sage comes in and like helps you fight these masses of enemies, and then obviously all of the bosses from the different temples come back for one encore.
Yeah.
And all the sages go, oh, I got this. Rock guy against rock enemy, right?
Yep.
Like, and you're like, at that moment, it dawned on me. I'm like, oh my God, this is just like the classic Zelda games where instead of the hookshot to finish the hookshot dungeon, you actually have these powers matched up to the bosses. Like, I somehow missed that, even though I naturally use them. But I loved how that came all together and made that emotional beat there.
I have a question that I never looked up the answer to, but if you don't, because I assume you can just jump down that hole from the start of the game.
Yeah, I did.
Fight.
So I did.
So if you're doing that, when those bosses come in, the sages aren't there to fight them for you. So do you have to do a boss rush?
I don't think so. I don't know if I turned around trigger. It may not trigger at that point. Like,
after you fight the waves of enemies, that happens.
I had misinterpreted the language of the game a little bit too, where it looked like the castle was standing on a pedestal. And I was like, oh, the way to the core is through that pedestal.
Oh.
And so I'm like flying around and I fall into the hole next to the castle. I'm like, oh, I've never been down here. So I keep going down. And then I get to this point where it's like the sages can't hear you here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of weapons and things. I'm like, I think I've ventured where I shouldn't be going right now. I wanted more light routes. I wanted more shrines. So I may have turned around or it didn't trigger.
No, this is after. Because what happens is you get to that point farther.
Yeah,
where the sages aren't there. Yeah. And then you fight like the wave after wave of different enemies with the sages' help. And then they get taken away from you because they are fighting.
I don't think
these
that
losses. Mm-hmm.
I think
you go in alone.
I think you need the final sage to trigger that. But like we can look that up later.
I'm just curious if that's what happens.
The section
point, maybe not.
Oh yeah, the section when you're past all that and you get to those waves and waves of enemies, mm-hmm. I thought was like so much fun.
Yeah,
and it's chaos and it feels like it. It was weird because I jumped into the Hyrule Warriors game they made as
Age
a prequel.
Of Calamity?
Yes. And I was playing that with my kid and just sort of being like, hey, look, this is what happens when there's like hundreds of enemies on screen, right? And they're all fighting each other and it's nuts. And like they threw a bit of that into the end of that game where there's just like increasing waves and waves and waves of enemies. And they were super fun to fight. And I got through all of that. And then I got to the door where you fight Ganon for the first time in like an old school sword fight, right?
Yeah.
And that was incredible because the first time he does a parry, to you, like the flurry rush.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, you can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was like Skyward Sword, right? Where like constantly the guy catches your sword when you try to attack him. Like,
it
was neat.
And
the parry.
I tweeted about this, but I got basically to that fight and I looked up and I was like, oh, all of my, and I had like almost maxed out hearts. I'm like, all of my hearts are corrupted except for two.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
This is the hardest fight in the game. And like, you know, there's people out there that can do that, but like, I'm a tired dad. And like, it was a Saturday afternoon and I was like, just, I gotta figure out my way out of here. But I was locked into it. So what I did was loaded a previous save file, warped out.
Went the travel medallion.
Went back, dropped the travel medallion, cooked a whole bunch of stuff, gloom recipes, and then came back ready to go. But yeah, the Demon King's army fight was super fun to me.
So I looked it up in the guide. So you can go down there even if you don't have all the sages. It just means that you have to fight each boss.
Okay, yeah. So that's what I thought. It's a boss rush.
When you have the sages, they basically each one is a card to be played against a boss you don't have to take care of. That's really neat.
I mean, it is basically Breath of the Wild again, because in that one you have to fight the little...
That's exactly
the little fake Ganon spirit guys.
Yes.
If you don't do their divine
Phantom Ganons.
Phantom Ganons.
Yeah. So when you all did that sword fight, how was that for you? Like, Pear, you just finished this game a few days ago. That was like, did you think that was it right there?
No. I knew the way it was set up. Like, traditionally, Zelda games always go like, here's Ganondorf, and then he gets bigger, he turns into Pig Ganon, or something happens, or he gets out of the castle and rides on horseback, or something.
Yeah.
I knew there was a setup for something, and you hadn't seen Zelda yet.
Right.
You know, and like, there's always this pivotal moment where Zelda comes in and unleashes her power, and that's the way
she's got
win,
a light arrow.
Right? Like, she is core to the story. It's the Legend of Zelda, not the Legend of Link. And so I knew it was going to happen. But yeah, I got a little annoyed with a Ganon fight where I had so many swords, I had good armor upgraded all the way, I had lots of potions to help heal gloom and all of that. And so it was more of a formality, I feel like. The fight was not so difficult that you would like shave off lots of hearts.
Right.
Yeah.
At that point. But then it got to the final fight, and it was not, and that one isn't very hard either once you have a lot of hearts, but it's just really fun.
It wasn't difficult, but the moment when Ganon's health bar.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Off the screen I was stunned. Jaw dropped.
Yeah. So cool.
I was fully standing up, you know, like I was not, I did not sit down for like an hour playing the end of that game. I was standing up like a little kid. I was like tears coming down my cheeks towards the end of it. But when that thing popped up, I screamed this in front of my 5-year-old. I said, holy, and then, you know.
Yeah, now he knows.
Give you a dirty look.
Yeah, words that, you know, that's not probably not good to
see. I thought that was it because he comes out and you fight him and you, when you get his health bar down to nothing, then the sages come back in.
Yeah.
And I thought, like that first one, I knew that wasn't it. But the second bit where all the sages came in and his health bar went nuts and there were a bunch of them, I was like, okay, this doesn't feel like it should be the last fight, but this is like, I don't know, this is like part 3 or 4 or something. I mean, maybe this is it. And it was sufficiently difficult, but the thing is, I had felt instinct. I had no idea how this was going to end. No, it was never spoiled for me. And I'm so thrilled that like the community respected itself and each other enough to just never let this get past a really clear spoiler tag.
Yeah.
I had an instinctive feeling that because of the themes of this game, it had, look at that.
It's the health bar. To do the health bar. That's such great.
That's wonderful meta nonsense.
Yeah.
It had to end in the sky, right?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't,
exactly.
Obviously, you had to jump down the super deep hole to fight him, but obviously it has to end in the sky, but I had no concept of how we were going to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, Zelda games are really good at wrapping up with an element that you learn very easy. Remember in like Twilight Princess, you grab the bull by the horns basically and perform this move.
Yeah.
And that's like the last thing you do in the game, right? Like, they're really good at bringing back the initial thing that you learned as a humble farmer or whatever you are in the game at the very end. And like, it had to go to, you can float and you can do something.
Yep.
They give you a fight that is intended to be a challenge, which this was. I mean, we were all decked out in swords and stuff, so maybe we were okay. But the fight with Ganondorf was intended to be difficult, but the actual final fight is entirely about feeling.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's okay. Yes. I think that's allowed.
Yeah, same. I wasn't really expecting like a FromSoft ending here in terms of like strategy and technique and you know, just brutal challenge. But also like you could have not picked up any heart container in the game and, you know, went in there with two gloom hearts corrupted and, thrown down with a rake that you found in a village. Like,
conversely, you know, like my sister-in-law is playing this game. She hasn't played a Zelda game since she abandoned Skyward Sword.
Right.
She set the motion controls were BS and she didn't like them. And then she hasn't touched one since then. And finally, she's back for this one. She skipped Breath of the Wild. She's not the greatest player.
Right.
But I think she can do it because you can basically fill your entire inventory with potions.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
there's no
4 glass bottles with fairies. Mm-hmm. It's like you can load yourself up and probably persevere here. Even.
We'll get to this later, but I had specifically done the last thing that I did before coming down here, aside from Floating Colosseum, was this side quest that involves acquiring so many rice balls. I officially hit the inventory limit for food.
Oh,
I had so many rice balls.
Yeah, I just like cooked like crazy before I went down there and ended up not using a lot of it. But speaking of eating things that make you more powerful, Ganon takes a large bite of something unexpected. And I love that this came full circle to the title of the game, which we never really truly understood, right? These tears.
Yeah.
That we saw, like, Zelda at one point of the game it takes one.
That is such an emotional scene.
Oh my god!
Like, do we get? Can we talk about that?
Yes, spoiler cast. Talk about anything.
Are we allowed? That's because we've never talked about that before.
Right.
Like, I mean, I saw that probably middle of my playthrough at some point. Wow. Like, I had enough clues up to that point to understand that that was something that Zelda was going to do, but actually seeing the scene where she does it, like. I think some people have been a little bit down on Zelda's voice acting. Whatever, have your feelings. That was a really good scene. She did such a good job.
She
and
did.
Like the animation.
Absolutely.
And like, I'm sorry, the dragon's eyes messed up.
Yeah.
Freaky. I rode that light dragon around for hours collecting stuff for, which by the way, that's a whole other messed up thing. Shooting like arrows at her to get scales to upgrade my tunic. That's real messed up.
Oh, that's like cleansing. It's like what the little birds do with the hippos and stuff.
I don't think that's true.
But
her eyes are so like,
well, there's that, like the
pain.
The sort of like that. This is explained to her, right? Like, this is a one, and obviously it's not, but it's like, this is a one-way transformation, right? Like, there's no coming back from this. You can do this. This is a sacrifice. You can do this to, like, save the kingdom, but, like,
that's it for you.
You can't sleep in your bed anymore, right?
Yeah.
I thought
your bed that you share with Link.
Not this again.
I'm not here.
I actually thought they would carry that through. I thought they would end it on some sort of she's a dragon in the sky, and,
right?
Like, we'll never be together moment. You know, like,
you thought they were gonna Nintendo?
I thought so because it was so, everything looked so like Miyazaki anime, and like it had like, you know, if you read Chinese literature, that's usually the ending to every story, right? Like the two lovers don't get together, like Crouching Tiger, any of these movies do the same thing, and they've been echoing that story. And this has like, I mean, this echoes Chinese literature a lot with the dragons and music and everything. Like that to me signaled maybe they're not going to get back together, which I think just heightened the experience and made the ending so much happier. And then Ganondorf is all like, I'm going to do it too.
They basically turn Marin into a seagull at the end of Link's Awakening. So like, and you know, that whole place disappears. Worse things have happened.
But they're not doing that anymore. No.
Dream.
No, but so yeah.
Majora's Mask was a sad ending.
Ganon turning into a dragon was next level for Nintendo.
Oh my god!
Just like so crazy, so hype, so awesome, and then to be like, wait a minute, that means we're going up there.
Yep.
So like, then you fly into the skies. Yeah, he rips the tear off his own head and eats it.
Can you imagine just eating a rock like just
from
on
your
its
face?
Own, like this really like unpleasant experience of
a
rock that large?
Oh my god! So
everything else
and just going
a shaped stone.
Going up there, soaring through the skies, riding Zelda's, you know, holding onto the back of her head, and then jumping off to stab Ganon in the face.
I love...
My God.
Oh, my God. I love how that sequence is so well designed. Like, every single moment of it is just this wonderful visual spectacle. The dragons, like, crisscrossing and doing, like, this kind of dance around each other. But I think one of the things that I love so much about it is, like, the very familiar mechanics of, like, jumping and falling and paragliding, like, that should be very familiar to you and is very basic. But we've never had a dragon sky fight in this game before.
No.
How on earth am I supposed to know what to do? But the visual cues it gives you are so completely clear.
Yeah.
Like, you are on the dragon. You can see the dragon below. Okay, I need to get down there. And then you see, like, the spots that you're supposed to hit. And it's just... It felt so elegant. Like, I felt like I knew exactly what I was doing. It felt cinematic. Like, I was playing out this, like, beautiful movie.
There's also that, like, you see that sort of silhouette Ganon dragon shape thing in Breath of the Wild surrounding the castle the whole time. And you're like, I'm going to go up there and stab you, and I can't.
Yeah.
Were you going to say, Per?
No, it's like, it also creates a moment of trust. Like, you have to believe that Zelda is going to prevent you from falling down. Because anytime you know, in Breath of the Wild, you follow a dragon, you get some updrafts, right? Like, that's how this old mechanic was introduced. In this game, whenever you go and try to farm pieces of a dragon, if you fall off, that's it, right? There's nothing you can do in the air to get you back up instantly. And so it's happened to me where I've fallen. But in this game, it's like, once you pass the dragon, Zelda will circle around and she'll come and pick you up. And I thought that was a really cool moment.
And then,
of like,
and then you get
to trust, she's got this, you
and
know?
You get to return the favor, basically. And you catch each other on afterwards, after the fight, and it's this
dude
beautiful moment.
And again, perfect callback to the beginning of the game with the outstretched hand, and he misses her, and she falls, and then they bring it back at the end.
And like so what the teaser trailer that we poured over months and months and months ago that has that, you see their almost catch hands.
Yeah.
That was in like one of the earlier trailers for Tears of the Kingdom.
The first one.
The first one. And it was just, we're just like, what is this game? What will this game be? When will we play it? Yeah. And to see that at the end, oh my God. Like I actually really love that in media. When you see a glimpse of an ending of something in a pre-release like trailer or teaser, but you have no idea that that's where it fits in the story. And then it finally shows up and you're like, oh, that perfect.
Yeah.
I'm tearing up a little bit.
No, I know. Good. And like the way the music swells and everything. And like when it said the end,
just
in white text on that black background, which was felt exactly like when you first started the game.
Oh, that moment right there with the two, that's so good.
Which for us was 9 PM Thursday, May 12th, 11th, was it? Tears of the Kingdom unlocked on our Nintendo Switches. You hit the button and it said, Nintendo presents The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom, that white text in the black background. Yeah. And then for this, it just said, the end. And I just immediately started crying. Just immediately.
Oh, I was bawling the whole time.
Yeah.
From pretty much the second we got in the sky, I was just...
Yeah.
I cried even before that. I cried when all my friends came back to help me.
Yeah.
So my daughter finished it a while back. I don't think she slept. And then my sons haven't finished it yet. So I would be trying to finish the game and like somebody would like start walking in the living room and I'd be like, ah! And they'd always turn around. Like when my son walked in earlier, I always hid the fifth sage.
Oh.
Always like took him off, turned off the metal because
We're going to talk about the fifth sage in a minute.
Yeah, I had to do that too because I got to that before my partner did. And my partner was not around, like he was out of town or something when I got that sage.
Right.
And so before he came back, I had to turn her off, and so I played like a good 10 hours of the game just without that.
Oh yeah. My God. Yeah. That was a wonderful surprise. We'll get to that in a second. We were talking about flying around on the back of a dragon. We have been holding this in for ages. A few weeks ago, we said, "Hey, when you get the Master Sword in this game, dress well, wear your best. Cause it's really cool. It's really beautiful. And you don't want to be up. I had my climbing gear on the first time. I looked like an idiot. You know, I had like a bandana.
Stupid bandana.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't need it. Like, I looked like I just got back from like Tougher Mudder. Right. Uh-huh. And I was like, no, let me get back out there with my tunic and do this right. I beat the game in my green tunic. I don't know, with the hero's tunic. What did you all beat the game wearing?
I had the anti-gloom outfit, the weird Zant looking thing, you know, the depth.
With the Jinkos?
Interesting choice.
That one. But like the ending switches you to shirtless.
That's for some of
them. Because they do cut to some pre-rendered stuff.
Yes.
And so they needed to make sure that you're not going, hey, where's my froggy hat? You know?
Reb, which armor set were you wearing at the end?
Champion's tunic. Okay. Hylian tunic with the whole hood pulled back, which you can do. Mm-hmm. And then just some like random pair of pants from one of the other outfits that I had just happened to upgrade. Cool. No, I mean, they were just white pants. They were nothing.
Oh, okay. Cause the hero tunic stuff is like, it's super strong in terms of like aggression and attack power when you have it maxed out. And I had that one maxed out, so I was really happy. But the Master Sword.
I
think this is the best Master Sword moment they've ever done. Like
it no longer runs out of energy finally.
No, it does.
It can. I mean,
in the boss battle, doesn't it just glow up?
I thought you meant like when you're pulling it out. Uh-huh.
No, so it does. It can run out of energy just using it out in the world. But I am actually...
I think you're right.
Because I used it that entire time. Right. It never ran out. And I think that might be like a video game...
No, it starts glowing stronger thing. And stuff. Yeah.
The whole quest line to get the Master Sword where they're like, you know, it's up there, but it seems like it's moving. And you're like... Well, maybe it's like a floating island or something like that. Yeah. And you get up there and you're like, no, it's Zelda. She's a dragon. She has this haunted pain look in her face. And there's a sword stuck in her head that needs to be pulled out.
Yep.
What?
And she did this on purpose.
Yes.
She knew.
Oh, it's so good. Like, I assume you can do this without ever talking to the Koroks about
the
sword,
can.
Right?
I did.
Like, okay, yeah. I did it proper. And like and later the fifth sage quest too, you can start it differently by floating into the area rather than getting the hints for it.
It's because I finished the Tears quest first.
Gotcha,
I had gotten to the Korok Forest. And the Tears quest tells you exactly what happened. And so you see her take the sword and transform, and you're like, well, I guess she's got it. And that quest also, she descends. Like,
yes.
For the final bit of that cutscene, she comes down very close to the ground, and so you can easily just chase.
Oh, that's
her
right. Yeah, yeah. No, right. She's super high up before that. Yeah, well, it's a cool moment, and like the Master Sword is moving.
Yep.
You know, just getting that thing. It's like, oh, I know where it is.
Well, it was. I think it's like fundamentally tied to the sort of core ideology of this game. And I feel like for so long, they have said that the definitive way to get the Master Sword was Link to the Past, right? And we will try to recreate that moment in so many different Zelda games. It is deep in these shrouded woods. There's, you know, little trickles of light coming in. There's squirrels running around and stuff like that. Yeah. There, you're in a Korok forest or something, and you walk up to this stone, this very sword in the stone, right? And do you have the strength to pull this out? Are you the hero that can do it? And you do it. And this game, to do that in the sky on the back of Zelda, who has now been like potentially permanently turned into a dragon, and she's like very, very pained, right? Like, yeah. But also like it's beautiful and it's haunting and terrifying, but also so powerful. Was stunning. Just
it is very Miyazaki.
Yes,
it is very, very Miyazaki. Like the idea of something extremely aesthetically beautiful and like thematically beautiful happening, but within it is a whole lot of agony and grief.
Yeah, there's definitely this layer of darkness that always reminded me of like Mononoke too. I mean, the whole arm thing and the Ganon swirls, everything really
the
looks
falling
like
falling scene at the end too.
Oh my god, yeah.
The thing that Nintendo adds and that I think a lot of companies don't nail as well is that I talked about game feel before. There's something tactile to pulling out the sword and some of the doors that you also have to swing open towards the end of the game where it's like it requires a certain amount of stamina or a certain amount of hearts.
And right.
As you're pulling, it goes,
right?
Like it depletes the meter. And it's just so cool the way that like it's just something to with the rumble and everything. It just works together and it just makes it feel like a real accomplishment.
Yeah. And I think it was like, you know, pulling the sword out of the stone in the Korok forest in Breath of the Wild, you had the heart meter drop down, right? And you know, if you did it too early, it was like, no, you can't do it. And I luckily had enough, you know, stamina and hearts and everything like that to get the Master Sword in Tears of the Kingdom. But there was that idea in your head that like, that if I didn't do this, I'm going to fall off of a dragon down to the earth, right? Yeah. And like falling is
danger
a big
to it.
There's a danger to it. You know, you're not just gonna like, you know, Hestu's not gonna just laugh at you in the corner, and be like, "Ha ha, I couldn't do it." Like you're gonna fall, right? And you might die. And like, you know, that'll be this thing.
Amigo.
Like, yeah, it's just like shaking the maracas. You're like, I don't know if I'll get back up there, and like what, like if I don't make this, I'm gonna have to spend so much time down here, going to shrines and doing all this other stuff. And then finally, I'll go back up there, and hopefully she's still there.
It reverses expectations a little bit, too, because if you played Breath of the Wild, you expect it to be heart-related.
Yes.
And so you've been stocking hearts anticipating this moment. But actually, it's stamina, because you're riding a creature.
I know, that's the other neat thing about this game. Like, a lot has been said about it's the same world, you're just doing the same thing over and over. And, like, you know, they're obviously, in Zelda games, there's this sort of concept of a quest to get the sword, and then there's these four usually elementally themed temples, which obviously was different in Breath of the Wild, and we're back to it. And so they're all these familiar beats, but yeah, I love how they mix up things like that, where it's no longer hearts, it's now stamina, or like it's different, it's moving. And like this game like constantly makes you go, I mean, I said this effing game to my kids so many times where I'm like, I like the fifth sage thing. I'm like, oh, you guys don't even know. Like,
Just
keep playing, you know?
So let's talk about that real quick because wow, what a surprise. And again, I want to say thank you to the community at large for being pretty damn cool about
No idea.
Like,
had no idea.
Because I like, look, we're all like, and IGN's guilty of it sometimes too, right? Like, we'll put something in a headline that like we think is pretty safe, or there's like a picture and a thumbnail of like a boss that's like kind of late game, and but I feel like I opened YouTube a thousand times to do my job while playing this game, and I didn't know that there in the depths was a robot that
a mech. A freaking mech. Not even one that you build yourself.
A spirit mech, yeah.
We've seen people make mechs, but like just an actual gameplay mech that you are given and can attach whatever to.
You could fuse stuff to its body parts, you could use it to beat enemies up, you could ride it around in combat.
Yep.
You know? It was just like I remember like doing that quest. I felt like I did it incorrectly. Like I hot air ballooned into the sky, ascended through a platform, and all of a sudden I was in a thing where there was like a head, and it was like, what?
Okay.
So where does this go?
Yeah.
Oh, you follow the laser down.
Wait, hold on.
Wait, you didn't,
so you didn't
do all
do,
the zappy
You didn't
parts?
Do the island?
You didn't do all the zappy parts?
Ryan Altano. Okay, so the actual way you're supposed to do that is like theoretically supposed to. There's no supposed to. There's this whole like island, not really dungeon, but like outdoor area that is designed to... I loved this section.
I did that in reverse afterwards.
The Thunderhead Islands, because there's a thunderstorm going on the whole time. I loved that because it felt like... a callback. This whole section felt like a bridge in a song. Like when you've done like the first couple verses, you've done the refrain a few times, and we are now like at this bridge to the finale. And you know it's coming, but you're just like enjoying doing something a little bit different. This felt like a callback to the original Sky Islands, the great big Sky Island, whatever it is, because it was about like navigating this chain of islands to get to a destination at the end, and you were continuously given a bunch of like bits and pieces to work with. But whereas on the Great Sky Island, you were supposed to be sort of learning the mechanics of the game, and it's teaching you, oh, you can attach this big stone hook to a wooden board and travel across it. This area was giving you a bunch more complex puzzles and then sort of like disparate pieces. So like it'll give you some pieces of wood, and then maybe you can go chop down a tree or go do or bring some pieces of your own, but it's much less guidance. And also there's a thunderstorm going on, so no metal. So you're sitting there trying to piece together, okay, there's like a railing, but it's like broken out in multiple places. How on earth am I going to get over there under these circumstances?
See, this
I loved that.
This is what's magical about this game, besides the million other things, but it's the fact that like it sort of legalizes sequence breaking in a way that if I go to replay this in 5 years and I do the Fire Temple the right way, you know, and I do this quest line the right way.
Nobody does the
No one does.
Right? I don't know anyone has done. I don't even know if there is a right way.
It's going to feel totally different for me. So yeah, for this one, the way I stumbled upon this felt like when you were playing Legend of Zelda for the NES and you're fighting a bunch of bad guys and you drop the bomb frantically and a door, you know, a rock blew open.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's the fifth dungeon. Oh, yeah. I found that by accident. Yeah. I didn't use a map or anything. So yeah, for me, I went to that thundery area up there. It was too foggy to see anything. It was like, you know, San Francisco on the 4th of July. And then I was like, all right, well, there's got to be I'll figure this out later. And then just hot air ballooned up there, ascended up there, and then started that quest line.
Did you ever clear the fog then?
Yeah, so the fog got cleared afterwards. Okay. I don't know what I did to do that, but then I went back after and then worked my way backwards through all of that, which was really, really fun.
There's some cool hidden stuff on that path. See, I was the opposite. Like somehow that portion of the map, late game, we're talking about like 150 hours into this game. I look at my map, I'm like, oh, I didn't find a single shrine in the south.
Yeah.
Like, that center part of the map. And it's a little sparser. I hate getting hit by lightning. Mm-hmm. So I probably went there early. I'm like, nope, I'm out. And then I'm like, oh yeah, there's this whole thing covered by clouds.
Yeah.
I looked at that the whole game. I would look at that and I go, that looks interesting and
there's
important. I'll save it for later. I'll save it for later.
Yep, same. I waited on that one. And then I will say that final quest, like going through the river and getting the pieces of the armor.
Yeah.
That was awesome. It was like a little Indiana Jonesy archaeology bit.
Oh, it was
right?
so fun.
Where it just felt like you're freely exploring this area and trying to piece together all of the different things. And then you go up there and there's a little bit of building. There's a little bit of puzzle solving, a little bit of watching out that you don't get blown up. And then when you pick up the piece of the mask, I'm a sucker for this stuff. Like anytime anything does like a light pointing at something, carrying it, like it's so cool. And then you attach it to a glider and you follow the laser beam.
Yep.
And then it keeps going and going down and down and down.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that. I mean, that whole area of like it, you know, it was the Spirit Temple, I believe it's called, right?
Yeah.
But it's like you don't technically enter that temple. Right.
No, there's no like dungeon component. The dungeon component is getting there.
Yeah, but they do build those four pillars around it that each unlock a different body part.
So it's a construct factory, then you walk it from there to the spirit.
Yeah, and each one of those was really clever in its design. And, you know, again, multiple approaches in the way you could do it. There was like that door that had all those gears on it that you could open up a certain way.
And developers were going nuts for the chain and the gear.
Yeah.
I didn't
the
fully
chain
understand.
Doors was freaking awesome.
I did not fully understand, because I saw a clip of it on Twitter and everybody talking about how cool it was. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that looks cool. But then I saw it in action and I understood what was happening. It's not just a door that functions when you toggle it on and off. It's a door that you function, it works. And then after you go through it, you then can dismantle the door pieces for parts and have them all work individually and then put the parts back together to make the door function
that's
again.
That's why I propped up the door after I opened it. I just put a thing in it, kept it, grabbed the wheel, and then there's this brief portion in one of the construct temples where there's a pool of lava that goes straight and two walls, like great walls.
Stuck on that forever. Yep.
The
so
top.
Annoying.
And like you can take a platform and attach wheels to it and cross the first part with it. The second part, you build sideways. You put the freaking the piece that you have sideways, you attach to the wheels on the outside, and it fits exactly.
Oh, it's so fun.
As demonstrated in the video here. And like a lot of people, I don't think ever got this part. Like, you know, he's doing it differently
Is this from our guide? Because I totally used our guide. Thank you, IGN Guides team.
You're so, if you put the wheels on the outside, I mean, that's one way to get across.
Well, maybe.
No, but you attach them on the outside and it's built exactly to fit. And it's so beautiful when that stuff works.
Super clever. Yeah. Reb, you and I hung out on Saturday.
It's way more economical the way they did it. I did it with wheels on the outside.
You were geeking out about a thing, a very, very optional side quest that I think very few people, it's up there with getting every Korok seed in terms of like, how dedicated do you have to be to actually do this? But you did the entire quest line about for Addison.
Supporting
our president.
We all have to support the president.
Which was what, 80?
It's like 80-something signs, yeah.
How's the president standing?
He's standing!
86 times, there's somebody in the game struggling to hold up a sign. Same guy, right? Every time. And he's just like, please help me out here. I don't want to let go of this. And you build a whole bunch of things around him. I did like one or two of these, failed them, and then was like, not worth
really?
It.
Really? You just gave up?
I gave up. But you did.
Oh, I love those.
But you did all of them.
Yes.
So tell me what happens when you do all of them.
So I've had a soft spot in my heart for this guy since before the game came out because Tom Marks was reviewing this game and I saw him do one of these puzzles and we were both gushing about how much we loved Addison and supporting the president. Yep. I didn't know there were going to be 80. So I when I first met this guy, I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to do as many of these as possible and see if I can finish this guy's quest. And I did them. And at a certain point I thought, I wish there was a way to track these. And there's just not. There's nothing in game to tell you which ones you've done and which ones you haven't. Mm. They're just kind of all over the place. Wow. Most of them are along roads. Some of them are randomly in the mountains. This guy is supporting the president all over Hyrule. Fortunately, only on the surface. No Skylands, islands, or depths. So
there's no map for them, right?
There's
You have to use IGN's map.
Well, no, so that's what I did. And IGN's map is really good. But the problem was I had already done like, I think by that point I had done maybe like 30 to 40 of them
just
organically. And I had no idea which ones I had done. I hadn't marked them. So I opened up IGN's map and I started going through and I started in Central Hyrule and I just went number by number. And if I saw a sign already standing, I just marked it off. And if I saw him there, I did the puzzle and then marked it off. And I got through it and like, I think towards the end I had missed a couple on accident, so I thought I was done, but I'd really only done like 75, and he was still going, well, I guess I gotta go put more signs up, and I'm like, are you kidding me, man? So I had to go back and keep checking. But finally, he gets to the end, you put the last sign up, and he almost fooled me because he says, well, I guess I gotta go put more signs up, and I'm like, literally where? But then he suddenly pauses, and his next line is, wait, I'm out of signs. And he gets really excited, and I got emotional. So like, I finished Tarrytown was the last thing that I did in Breath of the Wild, and I got kind of emotional before I like closed the game and called it good. And I was looking for some sort of like little small personal emotional payoff, and I'm so glad I got it with this guy. So he tells you like he's just really thrilled. He gives like this little speech about how important it was for him to support the president and how like he was supporting the president and you were supporting him.
Yep.
How meaningful that was. And then he says he's going to go tell President Hudson, and you go back to see Hudson and he's not there. And so I thought, okay, I guess he's just gone. That's weird. But then I found him not long after at a stable listening to the Stable Trotters, the musical group that you can help in a different quest. And he's standing there in his sign-holding pose. And you talk to him and you ask him what his deal is. And he tells you that he was going to go back to talk to President Hudson, but he kind of wanted to take a break. Good for him. But whenever he's in this pose, he feels like he's being supportive and he wants to support the Stable Trotters.
Oh, man.
That's so sweet.
But he says all that. It's really sweet. But then he also gives you a reward. He gives you a paraglider fabric, which is like this really interesting, like, like art deco pink, blue, yellow pattern of President Hudson's face. It's very like abstract and kind of weird. I didn't think much of it, but I went ahead and put it on before I went to the final battle with Ganondorf because I thought, okay, I mean, I did this stupid 80 sign quest for hours. I may as well put it on. And when I jumped into the depths, the fabric glows in the dark. It's so sick.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really cool. So it was worth it.
Do you think his arms are permanently stuck?
I think they are. I think he's just making up excuses for feeling supportive in that position.
There's an element to that quest, by the way. If I may take you back some 20 years into my career.
Oh boy.
When I first covered Ocarina of Time, there was all this talk about the 64DD.
Yes.
The disk drive add-on. We've got one in the office. I own one. And it was supposed to expand the capabilities of the N64 to have more storage so that the worlds could be more custom. And so in interviews with Mr. Miyamoto, he always said, well, we want to do this thing where when you're in the Zelda game, the Ocarina of Time was supposed to be for the 64DD, not on cartridge at all. If you're in this world, anything you do will leave a mark. So if you break something, it'll stay broken. If you open something, it'll stay open. If you blow up a wall, the wall will be blown up, right? Like, and it took them more than 20 years to finally realize this because this game does this very show-offy way.
It's so cool.
When you go under Hyrule Castle and you blow up the big rocks and the blue rocks, they stay blown up that same way, even when the Blood Moon comes back.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of data to track. It's kind of funny because PCs obviously had hard drives and were able to do this, but few games did that, like let you customize the world. In this one, with the sign quest, if you're crappy at propping up the sign and it's like, slightly slanted,
it stays.
That's the way it stays. The entire game. So as you walk around, you're constantly reminded of your semi-failure.
Yep.
Yes. Yep.
Of signs somewhat slanted.
It won't let it fall over significantly, and he stops you, and you have to redo the puzzle. But it can tip a little bit, and yeah, you're exactly right.
It's so good, and I love that. It's almost like this whole concept of the world just kind of changing with you, like was in the back of Nintendo's head all the time, and like, that is some efficient coding that they're able to store all that change. Like, just, I expected to go underneath Hyrule Castle and find everything I'd blown up and hammered down to be back to normal again and having to fight my way through. It's not.
In a 3D space, too, so with like lots of subtlety and variation. Just incredible.
And especially this is not necessarily the swan song for the Nintendo Switch, but this was the one everybody was like, we need more powerful hardware, and they're like, just give us a second. Let me show you what we can do here.
It's proof that good design will like trump everything else.
Exactly.
Ultimately.
I wanted to talk a bit about the story as a whole. I don't want to get like too deep into the actual lore stuff because there's some great videos out there. Zeltic made one of them. It's an hour and a half long. So the next time you want to sit down and watch a feature
film. Is part 2 out yet?
I'm not sure. Yeah. So, God.
I think there's a part 2 coming.
I just want to talk sort of like from the heart. As Zelda fans, how we felt about the story as a whole. Because I got to say, like, there was a kind of a running joke about Breath of the Wild that it didn't really have a story, right? Or it had a bit of one. It was sort of window dressing for exploration. But this time around, I feel like finding those big kind of tear-shaped things, those circles, right? The big Pikmin water bottles or whatever.
Yeah.
In the crop circles led to some really beautiful, really interesting, and occasionally very dark cutscenes that all came together really well for me. So
I love this.
Per, let's start with you. How did you feel about the story as a whole?
I really look. I like a glutton. I just wanted to do them all in a row.
Yeah, same.
I found one of the story elements, I'm like, all right. You know, I don't know where Impa is right now, but I'm going to the next, glyph and find the things. And I wanted to see how the story fit together. I thought that was really thoughtfully done because in a lot of open world games, and I love open world games. I play every Assassin's Creed, every Bethesda RPG. Love those games. But the story always gets lost. Like, I can't tell you what Far Cry 4 is about anymore. Or even, like, what were they fighting for in Assassin's Creed Ragnarok? Like,
no, I don't know.
I'm not even sure anymore. It gets lost. And in this game, you could open world and just do lots of fun stuff. And then you could follow the story thread. And it was kind of pervasive. And the reminders for the story were there in ginormous glowing display the entire time. I thought it was really well done. the flashback sequences. I really like the Zonai. It's like one of the oddest creatures that Nintendo has designed. Yeah. It was cool to get something new, you know, in addition to like Rito and Gorons and Zoras, like to actually get like this kind of new culture and like kind of peeling back the layers and seeing what made them tick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also thought it was really refreshing that the story for this game was very self-contained. It was not, and it was Majora's Mask all along, or the Twilight Realm, right. Or like it didn't try to like kludge together the often very disparate timeline of Zelda. And it,
if anything, it kind of threw the timeline in the trash.
And it connected with Breath of the Wild in a really unique way. It used geography and the look of like, you know, the golden trees and everything to kind of like cleverly like create this meta story around it. I thought it was just really beautifully done.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Reb, how did you feel about it as a whole?
I have a nice thing to say and a not nice thing to say.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
So my nice thing to say is I agree with everything Pear said. Yeah. I think it was phenomenal in that way. I also think that we've talked about the themes of like joining hands and connecting. As a contrast to Breath of the Wild, I think Tears of the Kingdom did a wonderful job of exemplifying that in its characters. Everybody from like one NPC in the middle of Lookout Landing to its kind of main and supporting cast of, you know, heroes and sages and stuff. I really enjoy everything. You know, the Addison side quest is a wonderful example of that. But then all the little moments where you're helping out like the villagers fighting off monsters in the dens, or there's like some goofy side quest where they're all trying to fight out monsters in underpants. Like there's so many wonderful little moments of Link being a character and like connecting with people. He's not a silent protagonist. Like you'll notice that all of his dialogue options are kind of quirky and silly. Mm-hmm. Like he's sort of a weirdo, like kind of Link is a real goofy weirdo, but he's lovable and everybody likes him.
And he never gets to celebrate his fame. Like everybody knows him, but they're always like, but you're too short to be.
Yeah,
he's the hero somewhere. There's a hero out there. I hear he's got a sword, but you don't have that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah, like
kind of looks like you, but not you. So definitely not you.
Or like the Giga clan pointing out, hey, you've got blonde hair. The hero's got blonde hair. We're really not supposed to be doing that. You got to dye your hair, man.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, there's just all these everything from like the little moments to those big like dragon set pieces, I think was just so well done to make this a cohesive thematic world. I think it's genius. I think it's one of, if not Nintendo's best work yet. So I'm saying that, but because I know people in the comments are going to be like, oh, Reb had this negative things to say about Zelda. I think it's wonderful. I want them so badly to like take one extra step in how they deal with Zelda in games like this. In Breath of the Wild, like I remember there was this big fervor at the E3 where it was going to be shown off, where people saw like a picture of the lanyards and Link was on the lanyards in his Breath of the Wild regalia, which we had never really seen before, and it was kind of like this weird like blurry photo, and people thought it was Zelda.
Right.
And they thought, oh my God, we're going to get to play as Zelda. Mm. And they lost their minds over it. And then that was not true. And then there was kind of a rumor that started up around Tears of the Kingdom that the same thing would happen again, that we would get to play as Zelda. And that didn't happen again. And I don't think we necessarily need to play as Zelda, but I do think it's kind of a massive bummer that her plot in both games has been to go off on this grand adventure of self-discovery, have a lot of like deep emotional moments and like growth as a person. And then ultimately decide that she needs to sacrifice herself for her hero and her kingdom in an especially like painful and traumatic and time consuming way.
Right.
Like in the first game, she was imprisoned with Ganondorf for 100 years. She was turned into a dragon for 10,000 years in what seems to be kind of a torturous and like mind altering way. And I don't know. It just like, it kind of sucks that that's what she keeps having to do. Like, I don't know. Is there a way for her to fight in some other way, or a way for us
outside of Smash Brothers?
Yeah. Or in Age of Calamity, or to sort of move on from the princess has to be the sacrificial lamb so that the hero can land the final blow. I think they're trying, and I think they're doing a lot of work to give her agency and character through all these cutscenes. And I'm so I'm so grateful for that. I hope if there's a third one of these, she's not in prison for 100,000 years. I just really hope we don't.
I mean,
have to
just
do that.
Like get like at the very least, like one of the playable people fighting alongside you in this game. You have five of them at one point, and one of them just does water bubbles.
Yeah,
you know,
and she can clearly fight. Like she's proven that she can. She has the light arrows. She has the sacred power. She was in Age of Calamity fighting. In this one, she's a dragon, and she does technically fight alongside you. Like she's not afraid.
No, I
not helpless.
I want to see them finally take that step. I don't know if that means making a full sequel to Tears of the Kingdom where there's like character swapping or anything like that. Or at least
it might not be that.
Yeah, I mean, if there's like key playable moments where it's just like you have this entire area, or it's like a summon, like you, like the fights by your side in some meaningful way that isn't just like they've moved away from the, you know, she's stuck in a dangling jail.
Not in a crystal.
But we can do better. We can do better by our women. And I don't even need her to be playable necessarily. I
think it'd be great.
It would be great. Oh my gosh, I would lose my mind.
There were hints at it where she's support and shooting the arrows while you're fighting.
She even has a model that follows behind you at the very beginning of the game. But I just want better for her. Like I want her to thrive. I don't want her to have to constantly be sacrificing herself over and over and over and over again because Link is the only guy who can actually do this job.
Yeah.
That's it.
No,
that's my complaint.
I think that's completely fair.
No, I think that's valid. Yeah. I think they couldn't, like, Nintendo is very structured with their storytelling, right? Like, and in their mind, like, The Legend of Zelda is the quest of Link. And, you know, ultimately it takes Zelda to defeat the evil, but it's the quest of Link. I think they just kind of, they're a little stoic that way.
Yes.
But I think
it's okay to move past it a little more.
I do think eventually you'll probably see a little bit more action. And like, honestly, that was one of my issues with the English voice performance was that I felt Zelda was very, very vulnerable and weak, honestly, in the early moments of the game. And I was like, are we really doing this again? Like I wanted more out of it. And I switched to Japanese for a while and it's very different.
Right.
So
right.
She's much more confident in that role. Obviously, there's an arc here, and like ultimately, she is super confident, and the sacrifice is meaningful, and it's a badass ending. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm not going to complain too much, but yeah.
Yeah, I just want someone to like, if not her, someone to sort of awaken in her the idea that she doesn't have to keep doing this. Like, surely we could have found a better answer for how to solve this problem.
I mean, as Sheik, she was pretty badass too, right?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's clearly in her moments. Character. Yep. It's not. Yep. Yeah, but I loved the story. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, no, it's completely
get okay. off my butt.
It's completely okay and normal and healthy. Here, you can go right on me right here. I'll say this right to you. It's very okay and normal and healthy to criticize the things you love. Sometimes the things we love have things we don't love in them, and that's okay. You can still love the whole thing as a whole and still be like, I don't like that over there. That's how I feel about water chestnuts in stir fries.
Oh my God.
Not a fan. Yes.
Water
okay.
chestnuts.
Are like
good.
Sometimes there are Stop things it. In there that aren't great and the whole thing is great to you. That's okay.
Yeah.
That's normal.
Yeah.
So,
some people don't like the fire temple, for example.
It's okay. I mean, I don't know if I play, if I don't, I have no idea if you play it right, if it's better, but
it's Temple of Doom. It's got to have a little chaos
structure.
It's
probably my
least, and you're dead.
One of them has to be a least favorite, right?
What is everybody's least favorite?
Fire Temple. Yeah.
Was it fire?
Yeah. I don't want to go back and forth on the minecart puzzles all day.
I think so. I think Fire Temple, because it's not like the language is not as clear as in the other temples.
I think that's
how
true.
To get through it.
Yeah.
But like if you did it perfectly, it probably would be amazing where, you know, like I think most people climbed. Maybe somebody figured out the structure of all the rails and just did it with
rails. I mostly did. There was one thing, but either that one. I loved.
I still like it.
I love the idea of the water temple. It was too short.
Yes, I was very sure. If we're getting into nitpicks, which we can do really quick before we wrap up, but the fact that you get all these characters running around with you all the time, and they're lovable, but let's be honest, they're idiots sometimes. Like, they run in the opposite direction when you need them.
Oh.
They get in front of you, and you hit the wrong button. Like, the Nintendo ran out of buttons on the controllers here. You couldn't just put, you know, I would love, like, a double tap up on the D-pad, and Tullin does his thing,
okay,
you know?
Give you the one,
no disrespect to Tullin, I love you, Tullin,
thing.
My boy.
All right, so you've got a bunch of crates, you break them, and you're like, thank God I'm out of arrows, and you stretch out your hand to grab, we were...
With the noise. Freaking, the noise is great.
Freaking arrows go flying off the mountainside, like at the hoof of a Lionel.
That's Tullin, though. That's my boy, you know?
I liked hitting...
Everything's gone always.
Lightning Lady accidentally triggering her power and turning everything bright yellow in the middle of a room where it's already really hard to see.
Yeah, Arkham Detective mode or whatever.
If you talk to her again, she'll turn it off.
Yeah, but you have to catch her first. She's already over there.
The other thing is, like, using Goron power to obviously break rocks and mine Zonite, and like, and you're standing in front of it and you're like, hey, come here.
Come on, you know.
And he's like, you run towards him. He's like, okay, I'm running away.
Yeah.
Don't run away. Come on.
That boy is not right. I'll say that. Yonobo is, he's just like a wrestler. Not all of it. Yeah, he is.
He's
running away. Like, even during the boss fight with that giant stone spider crab.
Yeah.
I'm like, we need to break
When I was surrounded by rocks and
we need
the
to
only
break
way
the
to get
foot.
Out
and,
for him,
and he's like,
every time he runs away.
I mean, when you first meet him and he interrupts all your climb up to Death Mountain to your area so it can cut back to him and he can go, hey, Link, I think we should go that way.
Yeah,
and you're like, that's where we're going.
He's a ninja turtle.
Yeah. Oh my God. Totally. Yeah.
There are moments where, unlike in a lot of other games where the supporting cast is almost always bad,
right?
There are moments where an arrow hits a, you know, Aerokuda and you're like, good job.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. Tullin rules.
To deal with it, right?
Like, when he starts critting, oh my gosh.
Oh my God, we love it.
I'm gonna sneak in one really fast, can I?
Yeah, go for it.
Way too many Raru's Blessing shrines. And I know I did all shrines. I did every single shrine.
I don't have a problem with those.
I know whoever is gonna, people are gonna say, but Reb, the Raru's Blessing shrines are where the puzzle was getting to the shrine in the first place. I agree with you. You're correct.
Right.
I did every shrine. There are so many shrines where there's not really a puzzle to get there.
What about the Raru's Blessing shrine that is a puzzle once you get in there and it just turns sideways?
One that goes,
okay, that ruled.
That was awesome.
That was a great fake out.
Okay.
But there's way too many Raru's Blessings. I want to like look at the numbers and see how many of those there were compared to the similar ones in Breath of the Wild where you just got the reward immediately. I was so excited to see a shrine. I wanted to do a cool puzzle, and it was just every time, Raru's Blessing.
The ones that feel like a puzzle are the ones where you bring the crystal. That one I feel like I'm cool with the blessing. There are a couple where you find your way into a cave, and then you expect the shrine to do
another
puzzle.
And it's just there. That's what I mean.
And it's like the shrine goes like, no, you're getting into the cave.
I just walked in here, man.
I agree with you.
We have minor nitpicks. That's okay.
It's a great game.
Yes.
But again, and here's the genius of Nintendo. Every shrine you do has a hidden treasure chest and it becomes part of the quest.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes they're not so hidden. The Raru's Blessing is not.
Right there.
But like it becomes part, like you can just beat the shrine and move on, or you can go, but I'm not going to beat it until I've found that chest.
Yes.
And like they're so cleverly placed sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're just so ingenious. It's very cool.
My last complaint is that I don't know what to do with my life anymore.
Yeah.
I know. So
I loved this game so much. I'm trying to play other games. I'm getting to them, you know? I'm having a good time, but it's not the same.
I never got, like, some of the outfits, I have a lot. I have Amiibo, too, so I got a lot of drops from them. But I did a lot of armor quests. I did a lot of caves. Obviously, not all of them. But I have some armor sets that are incomplete. And, like, before I fought Ganon, I was motivated to find them. I was also motivated to find upgrade parts, which can be really brutal,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
You got to find freaking like a gazillion toenails from like big boss.
Yeah.
And so
me creeping around at night trying to get beetles and stuff.
The moment you beat the game, some of that air is out.
Yeah.
I still have the motivator of getting all the shrines. I did all the light routes before I finished it. By the way, nitpick, that reward sucked.
It's not anything. It's nothing.
That was a lot of work in a very hostile place.
You didn't like your commemorative JPEG?
Yeah, an NFT, right?
Yeah.
Like
we got
a worthless NFT. But I'm still motivated to do all the shrines, but I don't know if I'm going to find all the armor pieces. And screw the Koroks, man.
No, don't do it. The signs are easier. That's if you want to do something completionist, do the signs are so much easier than the Koroks. There's only 80 of those. There's like
I did a bunch,
Koroks
but I haven't done them all. So the signs, I will agree.
Once I felt I had like a good number of weapon slots, I stopped bothering with the Koroks. And I felt bad because they were just like, help, man, I got to go to my friend's party. And I was like, I don't care.
No.
Sorry.
Once you get auto build, I feel like the Korok quests become a little bit more fun, especially if you've got Zonite to burn, you can just auto build a quick airplane and then get you there.
Yeah, it's true.
I've read the complaints from people that they don't like building. You know, that the common argument with this game is it's not for me because of all the building. I feel like you can play most of the game without building anything.
I didn't do a ton, no.
And the shrine puzzles are more akin to classic Zelda games where you take a cog and put it in a machine to fix it, right? Like it's a lot of attach a weight to something or tip the scale on something, except for that infernal pinball machine.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And there even some of the ones where you're supposed to like throw a ball at a target, you can just shoot an arrow at it. Yeah. It's all about making the noise.
There's
right?
a couple you can't brute force. There's one where you have to roll a ball down like a zigzaggy.
Oh,
ramp,
I love that one.
Or it's like three balls and you have to attach them together, but you really have to get it just right. And
you can shoot a bomb arrow at the target and be done. Like there is a cheese ball solution for everything. I did it right. Half of the fun is watching videos of people who solved it in a different way. And like, sometimes it's that accidental thing. I loved in the NVC Facebook group, somebody did the, I'm sorry, I forgot who posted it. It was one of the regulars. Somebody does a crystal quest, carries the crystal off the ledge, falls down, lets go of it before hitting the ground. And then the crystal hits them on the head and they fall off the island and they can't finish that quest now.
I'm going to loudly promote my own work here. I got the Kerbal Space Program two developers. I got two of them to record a video with me that we posted on IGN on the 4th of July. That's them instructing me how to build things to send Koroks into space, basically, but get them to a sky island and then get them somewhere else.
Did you come up with that idea? Did you just say it would be nice to get the Kerbal people?
Well, it's because people kept calling it the Korok Space Program.
Right.
And I thought, well, Kerbal Space Program.
It was such a great video. If you haven't seen it, look it up.
Pretty good.
It's, you know, at first they're kind of like, it's almost like baby steps. You can tell they haven't spent that much time with the game yet. And then they start getting creative and there's wonderful payoff. Like some of the stuff that they build is so good.
Oh yeah. It's real silly.
Oh man, I love it.
We're gonna get to some question block questions from the community in a minute. Yeah. But first, I wanted to kind of pick everyone's brains because I don't have an answer for this.
Okay.
I straight up don't. But now what? Like, where does this franchise go from here? They've said repeatedly the open world thing is the future, at least, you know, indefinitely or whatever. But I genuinely don't know how you build from a game that lets you create Metal Gears, right? Like somebody, there was a video we posted on our social medias on IGN of somebody on Reddit figured out a way to make an infinitely powered flying machine.
Yeah.
With electric turbines.
That is effectively piloting itself the entire time. And it reminds me of when we got to that point in Minecraft where you would open up Twitter or Facebook or something like that. And people would be like, hey, I built a Pokemon Yellow.
Yeah,
in Minecraft, you know, there's like a working TV screen. I use Redstone, and I made a functional computer. That stuff in this game, which was something that I found intimidating and off-putting, to be frank, early on pre-release, because I was like, this is not necessarily something I'm interested in. Became something that I didn't necessarily dabble in entirely myself, but was enamored with watching other people do.
Oh yeah.
The part that clicked for me was when you're doing your first like Mississippi River ship.
Yeah.
You, like add panels to do like a
big floppy.
Thing.
Yeah.
That's when it really clicked for me. But it was daunting at first. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What you're describing, I think you're seeing a glimpse of what's going to come next, because they have an electric powered motor system in this game, but you don't get the parts for it.
Right.
You can steal them from a shrine. If you've seen one of the propellers and the electric battery, you can steal them, then you can use auto build to construct it later.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not it's not built into the game to let you freely experiment as a keepable part. And the fact that they built all that's like, why, right? The entire game is centered around Zonite powered devices. And all the building is you put a Zonite battery on it, you've got a Zonite power tire, and then they got this whole system for electric stuff.
I know.
I got to think that eventually they'll do a little bit more with that, whether it's DLC or a sequel. But as far as where the game could go from here, first of all, there's absolutely going to be a remake or some 2D game or something in the past.
In between, yeah.
Yeah, like I know there's this quote, always be careful when something gets translated from Japanese. Mr. Aonuma saying we're focusing on open world does not mean, you know, they're not going to have a remake of a reissue of Wind Waker or Link Between Worlds or whatever.
Yeah, they flip flop back and forth periodically, and they're still doing.
They'll do it.
They're clearly still doing top down Zelda games.
We got Link's Awakening.
Talking about his team, right? Like, we don't know what Grezzo is doing. Right?
Of course, yeah. We got the Link's Awakening remake between Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, and that even before they just go and grab the, you know, Twilight Princess and Wind Waker remasters from HD Wii U.
I still think
era.
Those are made up.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they are, right? Yeah. But I do think that, like, we could theoretically get a Link Between Worlds, a Link to the Past, or even, like, a brand new Four Swords style top-down.
Yeah.
Like, they're always experimenting with that. They have multiple teams working on that.
They haven't done multiple.
Because people like that stuff.
The
yes.
Player one. But where the series could go next, right? Like, I think it's a stretch to say they will use the same world again.
Yeah.
And make you, like, make you rediscover all those places. I do think that maybe they will create an all new world a la Majora's Mask, right? And maybe they reuse systems, but it'll have a different focus. But there's a huge element from the 3D Zelda games that is not present at all in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and that's iron boots and underwater,
right?
Right? Like, all the Zora's domain stuff is above water, and like floating on top of water and swimming is, you know, once you get to swim up the waterfalls, that's one of the coolest things ever, of course. But you don't go underwater.
Galaxy Brain Theory, I think we were supposed to.
Yeah?
Because really? they have those water bubbles that you can kind of float in a little bit. And there's like... Sidon's power kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But like all of the... Like there's a flying-based power, and there's kind of like a mining-based power.
Yeah.
It just seems like there should have been something there for swimming,
even
right?
Even a suit with like a bubble head to let you...
I remember that was kind of a theory people had early on that swimming was... I wonder if it just like messed things up too much. Because if you watch those videos where they like break apart the world of Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, there's basically a layer of water under the whole world. Effectively, because that's just how they designed all their water stuff. And so I wonder if it just broke too many things.
But it's, you know, people really liked Wind Waker and the sailing, just not too much of it. And like, that would be a big visual distinction if we went to more of a water-bound, ocean-themed kind of game again, something like that. You know, Assassin's Creed did it with Odyssey too, to have, you know, this sort of island set up. I could imagine something like that, and then making water and diving a bigger thing. There's
like
so
that.
Much you can still do with this open world setup.
Of course, of course. And I think like the depths was for me, like one of the biggest surprises in the game, one of my favorite parts
of
it. Yeah, and like just the parallels were obviously, right, with the overworld and the underworld were really, really cool. And I feel like there's an opportunity for them to go deeper into that, no pun intended.
Oh, wow.
And build on something that
more
like
tears.
Yeah, and more tears, exactly. And I think you can get more evil down there. You can get more dark and crazy and sinister and get you fighting a bunch of bad guys. Or maybe
bad water people are coming.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, Link to the Past had this straight up like portal that let you go between those areas.
Yeah.
And I think there's an opportunity to take an open world, and then at the push of a button, it turns into a completely different open world that's, you know, not necessarily like darker and more sinister, but like stranger and weirder. And
I mean, the depths are so interesting because obviously as a world, they're not as cool as the overworld, which has these towns and like diverse dungeons and stuff. It's kind of like the upside down, right? Where everything looks similar and moldy and spory and nasty. But I really liked how exploring it turned into like playing Spin Tires.
Yeah.
You guys have ever played any of those games where like, okay, I got parts to build a vehicle now, and I'm going to ride it to get over the red gook, and I'm going to drive it now, and then the freaking thing like falls into a small hole.
A second, yeah.
And then before I know it, I've spent an hour trying to get it back out and reconstruct
all the time.
It, even though I could have just gone
up. Just walked.
You know, it's like I felt for that car. I needed to take it.
I know. No, the game had a lot of that in Cub Scouts growing up over here. We had this thing called Pinewood Derby, right?
Yeah.
Where like you and your dad would like make this crappy car, and it was, they all gave everybody the same piece of wood, and then some kids cheated and they put like weights and then, you know, like lubricant instead, and you would put it at the top of this little hill and it would roll down and stop, or it would zoom all the way to the end, you'd win a prize.
I spent half an hour trying to get Epona across a freaking river at one point. I'm like, that was one of the failings. Like, the horses can't go on a plank of wood, right?
No.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's got to be a way. I don't want to ride all the way to the north with the only bridges left standing. And like,
Yeah, there were definitely a couple of hills where you're like, I think a horse can get up this
Come
thing.
On. Come on, you can do it.
I think it would be very, very, very difficult for Nintendo to make something bigger than this. I mean, I would have said that about Breath of the Wild.
Right.
And then they made Tears of the Kingdom. So I could be completely wrong. But Nintendo loves to surprise and do things that are deeply unexpected and strange. And so if I have to make a prediction about where the series goes from here, I think... I don't know that we go back to this Hyrule. I think this is just a duology.
He's gonna leave eventually, right?
I don't even know if it's the same Link, but I actually would really love to see them scale down. Well, not scale down, scale down in size, but make a game that is very Majora's Mask in that it is like small and contained and puzzle boxy and just like tight fitting, because they've proven they can do that. Like, make these like wonderful little puzzle boxes.
Right.
But I would love, like, I don't know, like a Zelda, like Disco Elysium, but Zelda, like just this small contained area that's just like stuffed full of detail and where everything just works, like a much smaller map, but it's just like so freaking packed that you don't know what to do with it all. And you're constantly rediscovering.
Really cool.
Things.
Yeah. And Majora's Mask did this clever thing about tracking people's problems rather than just puzzles and things. It was.
Yeah. And so you're revisiting really the same areas like over and over and over again, but you're constantly discovering new things about it. And that's like kind of what I'm thinking, because they've sort of gone to they've done the Link to the Past Dark World kind of thing with this one. And so what else do you do kind of on the same lines? And I'm like, well, maybe you make what looks like a modern Majora's Mask, not the same game, but the same kind of idea, smaller, rearranged.
I'd be there for that.
Ways.
Me too.
That'd be awesome.
I'd still want those quiet moments of minimalism, you know, where like it's just a dainty little piano sprinkles and then you're walking over a hill and something happens. But I like that a lot. I feel like with Nintendo, one of the most delightful things about them is that they start with a mechanic and then they go, which franchise does this fit with? Mm-hmm. Like 20 years ago, we were like, what's next for Zelda? And they were like, the hat is a bird now. You're like, what?
That's right.
Yeah, the hat is a bird. It talks. And you're like,
how they came up with Splatoon. It was just like these tofu blocks spurting paint.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know, what's this?
That's right. There was no shrinking, no minish in this one either, right? Like that was an element they talked about in the past.
For Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. We asked the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook, or Jada did, before she finished the game. So she asked a question and walked away and was like, ooh, can't look. And this was... You know, I believe 2 weeks ago when we were planning to do this episode originally, and it seems that not a ton of you finished the game then either. So I don't blame you for taking your time. But yeah, seriously, like...
Take your time.
Yeah.
Take your time. Yeah.
Oh, too late now.
Yeah, too late.
At the end of the spoiler cast.
Yeah, I mean, you listened to this whole thing. You should still finish it.
Christian Travis D. Sigley, I think as his name is, says, what has been the most surprising thing of Tears of the Kingdom besides the depths?
Okay. I can't.
The biggest surprise.
I can go first.
Mech. Huh?
The mech for me.
I think the mech too.
Yeah.
But I would say on a smaller scale, I was expecting the four dungeons to be the only really kind of significant puzzle places. And then you go into the sky and there's one sky island that has mirror puzzles in it.
Yeah, that's
I found
good.
That before the mirror puzzles of the desert of the lightning one.
Oh.
And like, I just thought that was so cool to find like something that could be a dungeon in any other game, a full-fledged dungeon, and they're just like, nah, just one of the islands, here you go.
Yeah. Actually, I have a more full answer than that. I talked around this on a previous version of this podcast, but now I can just talk about it. There are a handful of very small world state changes that happen that are very subtle, and they generally revolve around this fake Ganondorf puppet Zelda that you discover has been causing various levels of mischief, but then also evil around Hyrule. And there's a couple different versions of this. So one of them, I believe it's triggered after you do a very specific quest with Pen, where you find out that the Yiga clan can also disguise themselves as Zelda. Mm-hmm. And then after that happens, you can go up to the Great Plateau, and at the fire where the old man meets you in Breath of the Wild, Zelda's standing there. And she's instantly recognizable at a distance. And you know that's not Zelda. Right? Like, you look at that, you're like, nah. But you gotta go see what the heck is going on. Uh-huh. And so you talk to her and she's like, oh, I don't remember anything. What's going on? And you kind of have a moment of like freak out. And then it's the Yiga clan again.
God, always.
And then, but then the other version of that is after you discover the puppet Ganon in Hyrule Castle, if you, I know most people have been skipping the Blood Moon cutscene at that point, but if you actually listen to the Blood Moon cutscene, she's gone. Her voiceover is no longer in that cutscene after that point because it was the puppet Ganon all along doing that reading. It wasn't the real Zelda. And she's gone now.
What the heck?
So, but if you listen to that full reading when she does the lines, she has like this very, like her original, the Breath of the Wild line is, the blood moon rises once again. Be careful, Link. But the Tears of the Kingdom was, when the glow of the blood-stained moon shines upon the... And you go like, okay, duh, that wasn't Zelda. She wouldn't say it
Dark
like that.
Galadriel.
Right. Yeah, so there's a couple other things like that. But discovering those tiny little world state changes, oh, really good.
The amount, like that's where I'm like, this where I kept on saying this effing game. Like you'll discover like a reaction, like, you know, you talk to somebody from a table and they're like, why are you standing on the table? Or you wear a certain thing, or like you've got a Korok on the cart and like something gets hit by lightning and the Korok goes, oh my God, right?
Yeah.
Like there's all this stuff they coded into this game that they didn't need to.
No.
And like, and that's, I mean, that's why it takes them forever to make one of these games.
Mark Norley asks, from being possessed as Demon King in Spirit Tracks to having puppet versions of in Tears of the Kingdom, do you see Zelda having an antagonistic role in future games?
Ooh.
She did that in, yeah, I mean, in Twilight Princess, she was super creepy, right?
Right.
But
I don't think they'll do it. No. I think they've got like a brand, like, I think they have a brand Bible. It would be very cool. I think they have like a brand Bible somewhere and they're just like, no.
You don't think they'll do like a possessed Zelda that you fight in a sword fight or something like that?
There's probably a brand Bible somewhere that says you can't hit Zelda with a sword.
Tears of the Kingdom. Twilight Princess did some of that, right?
Did you fight Zelda in that?
Remember she's all like pale and white eyed and stuff, and it's like a creepy scene in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they'll create this sort of like character moment where she does something that that she's the antagonist. I think probably giving her more agency, like Reb said, is probably more likely, I think.
I think so too.
Well, finally, Nathan Sisodia says, I love the coverage of Tears of the Kingdom, but I'm so looking forward to normal NVC. Well, good news, thank Nathan you. And everybody else. That's about all the time we have left for the final episode of Talk of the Kingdom. I want to thank you all for joining me up here today. I want to thank our amazing NVC audience for listening and watching to this very special Zelda miniseries. I want to thank everybody at IGN who pushed for the show, supported the show, the art team that made all the awesome graphics, all the people who've been on the show, Tom Marks, who reviewed the game, gave us, you know, some of our favorite moments early on of doing the show. Like, it's been a blast. I've been a massive Zelda fan ever since I was like 5 years old. Hosting the show, talking about this game with my friends has been a dream come true. So thank you for letting me be here. If you're tired of me, that's fine. Be sure to come back next week for your regularly scheduled Nintendo Voice Chat episode hosted by the wonderful Seth Macy. Finish the game, Seth. Until then, NVC is available on IGN, YouTube, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you're watching us on YouTube, leave us a like and a nice comment. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please leave us a nice review. And don't forget to follow Nintendo Voice Chat on Twitter and probably everywhere else soon. If you want a cool Nintendo shirt, like the one I'm rocking right here, this wonderful sweatshirt, check out the IGN store. Reb's got one on too. Tons of great Zelda shirts on there, tons of Tears of the Kingdom, great Mario shirts. My kid stole one of them, even though it's an adult medium, and she wears it to bed and just looks like a fool.
It's a tent. And it's a walking tent.
It's a huge tent. She stretched it out, you know, with arms and knees. Just so, yeah, buy one for yourself and your pets, your kids, whatever. Until then, thank you so much for listening and watching to Nintendo Voice Chat. We'll see you next week. And you remember that Nintendo Voice Chat is the only place where we can do this for one last time.
We can.
You can
get the tingle.
No, the tingle.
The tingle.
Tingle?
Have you not been here?
Tingle is not in the game. See you in 6 years.
There's a tingle.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.